morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dengbyor in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, October 21st, 2019. Riek Machar digs in his heels on refusing to form a unity government before the big issues are resolved.
What we have found out is that even in 3 months we will not be ready to form a unified army or a unified necessary forces.
And a UN Security Council delegation pays a visit to Juba.
We were disappointed by statements from Dr. Riek Machar that the ceasefire would be in jeopardy if a government is formed by November the 12th. However, statements from other political stakeholders discussed the potential for formally warring parties to come together and form a transitional government on November the 12th.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar left Juba for Khartoum today without reaching any deal with President Salva Kiir to resolve outstanding issues before forming a unity government in November. Machar, who arrived in Juba on Saturday, told a UN Security Council delegation visiting Juba that the pre-transitional period should be extended once again to complete security arrangements. Riek Machar warned the UN Security Council delegation Sunday there could be a repeat of the 2016 scenario, meaning a fresh outbreak of fighting if a unity government is formed before the remaining issues are worked out. Machar met with President Kiir on Saturday, but the two failed to reach any agreements. Yesterday, government and opposition security chiefs briefed Machar and Kiir on the status of security arrangements, telling both leaders there has been little progress. During a meeting between the UN Security Council delegation, civil society activists, and other political parties officials who signed the revitalized peace deal, Machar warned if a transitional government is formed by November 12th, the ceasefire, which has been largely holding for months, will rupture.
What we have found out is that even in 3 months we will not be ready to form a unified army or a unified necessary forces.
Machar says the parties have yet to determine the number of states and their boundaries or fully implement security arrangements, and as such, civilians who fled to neighboring countries or UN-run camps cannot return home safely. Machar says because of that, if Kiir insists on forming a unity government by the November 12th deadline, his group will stay away. He said the IO won't be there because the rebel group does not want to, quote, put the country into crisis, end quote. The Kiir administration insists the parties have made significant progress in implementing security arrangements, so the unity government should be formed on time. Martin Elia Lomero, South Sudan's cabinet affairs minister, said, "We will have that protection force, which includes 900 of the IO component and the SSOA component. So there should be no fear, because the protection we are talking about is about the VIP, not the citizens of South Sudan," end quote. While a number of other opposition parties say the government should be formed by the November 12th deadline, others think it should be delayed to allow the parties to reach an agreement on the outstanding issues. Lama Kola Jawin is head of the National Democratic Movement.
Why don't we give ourselves,
let's say, 2 months in order to resolve the issues of security arrangements and the number of states, rather than form the government that will collapse in 2 months?
Kiir did not attend the joint meeting with the UNSC, opposition parties and activists, but did meet separately with the Security Council delegation. Denga Lor, a member of the former detainees, says Machar's demands are genuine if lasting peace is to become a reality in South Sudan. He says the Kiir administration has no political will to do so. Rebecca Nyandeng, widow of the late SPLM leader John Garang, the man whom many call the father of South Sudan, says she supports the idea of forming a unity government next month.
But a government of a revitalized government must be formed come November, because people that we are talking about will run away from us if we continue extending.
Rajab Mohandas, executive director of the Organization for Responsive Governance, a Juba-based civil society group, says the progress being made into the permanent ceasefire that has resulted in saving lives and improving the situation should be supported, end quote. But Mohandas added the cantoned forces don't have enough food, and if they cannot proceed with the reform process, the citizens will be in trouble. End quote. The U.S. had said it will reevaluate its relationship with South Sudan if the November deadline is missed. Dimo Silva Aurelio prepared this report in Juba. A United Nations Security Council delegation was in Juba yesterday to meet with the parties to the peace deal. One UNSC member said the council is disappointed with Machar's rigid position on the formation of the unity government. The U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN Security Council says a unity government should be formed on time while the parties continue to work on resolving outstanding issues. La Suba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
Before boarding her plane at Juba International Airport last night, Kelly Craft, the U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN Security Council, made it clear that the Council was not happy to hear Machar warn that the ceasefire would be on shaky ground if the parties did not agree on all outstanding issues before the November deadline.
We were disappointed by statements from Dr. Riek Machar that the ceasefire would be in jeopardy if a government is formed by November the 12th. However, statements from other political stakeholders discussed the potential for formally warring parties to come together and form a transitional government on November the 12th.
Machar argued that members of opposition groups have often found it difficult to move around the country to disseminate the peace agreement because some key administration officials warned they will be shot. Machar also says he fears his forces may not be part of a unified force during the transitional period, a prospect he said can return the country to war. Kraft says South Sudan's leaders should listen to the voices of citizens who are yearning for peace so they can rebuild their lives.
There is an opportunity for the people of South Sudan to live free of political violence and secure an economic future for their children. There is an opportunity to look forward to a new generation in South Sudan that does not depend on humanitarian assistance to foster human dignity.
UN Security Council President, hailing from South Africa, Jerry Matthew Madjila, who headed the 15-member delegation on a one-day visit to Juba, describes the November deadline as the last mile.
Nothing is impossible. Nothing is insurmountable. All of them to meet Security Council halfway, to meet the UN halfway, and that halfway is what they requested, November 12th. So it's not sudden. No, it's not sudden. They saw it kept coming from April, May, June, July, August. IGAD has been engaged. It's not sudden. AU has been engaged. It's not sudden. So what Security Council has, it's just a minimum to say, okay, now that you committed this last mile, what can we do on this last mile to November 12th? It's a last mile, and it has to happen.
Madjila says the UN has a huge presence in South Sudan, and the Council's visit to the country was meant to demonstrate how much the world cares about the South Sudanese people. Madjila says the UN stands ready to support the expected transitional government in every way possible, including providing security for opposition leaders.
If any leader needs security, we'll give security, or the UN can provide security. So the major question was security. The government says we are committed. Any number of people, protection, etc., etc.
Machar has said he is not concerned about his personal security, but worries about the safety of South Sudanese citizens, noting many displaced people still fear returning to their homes. President Salva Kiir resumed face-to-face talks with Machar in Juba last night after the UN Security Council departed the capital. Upon her departure, Ambassador Kraft once again urged the country's leaders to work together toward forming a unity government.
Our hope is that the leaders will remain engaged, Dr. Riek Machar will remain engaged, Dr. Salva Kiir will do everything possible to clear, resolve issues so that everybody might participate. But we also do hope that South Sudanese will urge their leaders to move on with implementation of this.
Madjila says the Security Council delegation was heading to Addis Ababa to meet with members of the regional bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development and African Union to talk about South Sudan. For VOA News, I am La Suba Memo in Juba.
Kwat Kane is a member of the SPLM-IO National Pre-Transitional Committee. Kane says the SPLM-IO is concerned about incomplete security arrangements as well as the number of states. He says the SPLM-IO wants to see a security that is national, not tribal.
On the 3rd of May this year, we did extend it the free transitional period simply because there were critical tasks outlined in the agreement, which were not accomplished, that we must meet those tasks before the formation of the government. And that is to say, the security arrangement, there must be necessary unified force in place for us to have a unity government in place. That has not been made. And our chairman did outline the fact that even if you form the unity government, it will not serve the people of South Sudan. The people of South Sudan want to see a security that is pro-people, a security that is national in nature, an army that is national in nature, a police that is national in nature. Not tribal army, not tribal security, not a tribal police. So all my chairman is saying, let's implement this agreement in letter and in spirit. And let us not build the house from the roof. Let's start it from the base as we go to the roof. The second that he didn't mention is the number of states. The number of states is one of the issues that caused the 2016. We are not ready as SPLM-IO to go into a government that will be busy renegotiating the agreement.
Mr. Khan, what do you think the members of the Security Council, what was their reaction? Because I'm looking at a quote here from the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations saying that the council was disappointed by your chairman's comments.
Well, I don't think my chairman has made anything wrong. Instead, he was honest as to how the situation is on the ground. And he wanted the council to come to the rescue of our people. And let me give you an example, Jenny. Without the security arrangement in place, those people who are in the POC, that is the protection site for IDP, those people who are in the refugee camp will not return home. What will be the price of our people if they could not trust their own security? So I don't see why the ambassador should be disappointed. In a sense, the ambassador should be happy for the Soviet being honest to us or to the council. But we are committed to the implementation of this agreement in both letter and spirit, and that we would not want to work outside the agreement.
South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makui says that there has been no change in the schedule. As far as the government in Juba is concerned, there should be a transitional government by November 12.
That is their position. But they must also be informed that they are working against the agreement. When we extended the period, they pledged to fund the agreement by at least $100 million. We did not realize that up to today. Instead, they decided not to fund the activities of the security arrangement. They are the reason why today we are talking about the security arrangement. So they should also be mindful of their responsibilities. When they're talking of the 12th of November by passing the agreement, they should be mindful of what it takes when you form a government that is not inclusive in nature.
That's Pwat Kane, a member of the SPLM-IO National Pre-Transitional Committee, speaking with my colleague James Buddy. A month has passed since Rwandan and Ugandan officials vowed to ease tensions and to set up a follow-up meeting to remove all thorns. Instead, a number of incidents have made relations worse, and there's no sign of the new meeting. Eugene Uwimana has more details from Kigali.
It was on 16th September in Kigali when Rwanda and Uganda, together with mediators from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Angola, had an ad hoc meeting. Ugandan officials were supposed to invite their Rwandan counterparts to Kampala. But the Rwandan government says it had no word from Uganda. State Minister in the Foreign Affairs Ministry, Olivier Nduhungirehe, calls the situation unfortunate because the two countries are essentially sisters.
Rwanda and Uganda, as Minister Kutesa said, share historical ties that should normally build a strong strategic alliance given the long-standing bonds linking the two peoples and countries.
Instead, Rwandan government says it registered numerous cases of insecurity incidents from Uganda. 45 assailants who attacked Rwanda's northern province and killed 14 civilians said they were recruited in Uganda. 25 soldiers said in court that they fought for the Rwandan National Congress, a dissident party operating in exile, or admitted to having military roots in Uganda. That runs contrary to what Sam Kutesa, Uganda's Foreign Affairs Minister, said when he was in Kigali last month.
The point is that we have nothing to benefit in destabilizing Rwanda. just like I think they have nothing to benefit by destabilizing Uganda. We are going to be investigating all these allegations and counter-allegations, and we shall find a way of resolving them.
The follow-up meeting in Kampala was to be tasked with discussing the implementation and progress of the Luanda Memorandum of Understanding to put an end to Uganda-Rwanda tensions that have festered for a couple of years. The agreement was reached with the help of Angola's president, João Lourenço, and DRC's Félix Tshisekedi. The current situation makes political analysts sound pessimistic about the effective implementation of the Luanda Agreement. This is Gatete Thierry.
But these MOUs are pieces of paper if people don't have the will to implement what is in those pieces of paper.
Ugandan government did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Though high-ranking Rwanda's soldiers trained and worked in Uganda's army before 1994, the fact that some who fall out with President Kagame understand with Museveni put the implementation agreement on hold. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As a South Sudanese in Canada, landing a job isn't easy, but one diaspora member has some advice. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how has technology impacted your life?
When I want information, I just pick my phone. I just go to Google, and all the information that I want, I get it just right where I stand.
It needs me to be so social to people, like on Facebook. I've known so many people, knowing how they are going on in life, and also on WhatsApp, chatting with my friends.
It's educative to me as well, because if I need to know something about history, something about a disease, something about some medicine, I just go and read about it online.
When I need information, I don't necessarily have to go to the library. All I need to do is just pick up my tablet and I Google whatever I want to know about whilst in the comfort of my home.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Is Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni really finishing his political opposition? Stephen Kafiro, a journalist with the Ugandan Monitor newspaper, argues that, aside from the ever-present state coercion, a closer look at the opposition since the 2016 presidential election shows disorganization, infighting, and defection. But Kafiro says the emergence of lawmaker Robert Chagulani, also known as musician Bobby Wine, and his People Power movement could be a potential game changer for Museveni. Nevertheless, Kafiro says Museveni could benefit from any potential fallout between Wine's supporters and opposition politician Dr. Kizza Besigye.
President Museveni, sometime in 2015, made very interesting declarations against the opposition. He said, to paraphrase him, that the opposition by 2021, which is the next election cycle, would be finished. And so I look back at the events that have been happening in 4 years since he got a new mandate, and it would appear his prophecy, his declaration, if you want to call it that, is taking shape. And so we thought with my editors that that's something that would, you know, cause a discussion right about now.
But Stevens, some would argue that President Museveni himself is the problem because of the way he treats the opposition. He uses violence.
Absolutely. I would think that is not in doubt. But also, the opposition has questions to ask of itself. Because the repression is not new. It has been around, if you want, since 1986 when President Museveni took power. The first violence, the first repression. But if you look back about 5-6 years ago and what was happening then and what is happening now, you get a sense that he's finally having an upper hand. I mean, it might be too early to predict But that's what it looks.
You write, Stephen, that away from the ever-present state coercion and the narrowing political space, what emerges from a critical look at the opposition since the last general election is disorganization, infighting, defeat, lack of strategy. What do you think accounts for this, and what do you make of the emergence of, say, politicians like Bobby Wine?
Well, the defeat, if you look at the number of by-elections that have happened in the country, this is where the opposition used to really, really assert itself in these by-elections. If you do the tally, it doesn't give a great picture. The NRM seems to be getting an upper hand. Whether it's getting it fairly, whether it's getting it genuinely, is a topic for another debate. I mean, Bobby Wine has emerged. He's an exciting candidate, and strangely, he has excited the quote-unquote the international community. But I've talked to people. I also, personally, I think he's not qualified. He still has some work to do, to go into the villages, to go into the communities, to organize, to put it together.
That's Stephen Kafiro, a journalist with the Ugandan Monitor, speaking to VOA's James Butty. Immigrating to North America comes with challenges. One South Sudanese who migrated to Canada as a student more than 10 years ago says it's not easy to land a professional job in Canada. Stella Minga says most skilled migrants in Canada had to go back to school to find a good job. Minga helps immigrants find jobs, says networking can help job seekers in her community land a professional job.
I help new immigrants to Canada to find either a second career, to find employment in Canada, or if they want to go back to school. I also help like Canadian as well as permanent residents to find different career paths or employment. So basically that's what I do.
I was speaking to people here at Victoria Gardens. I found a group of people sitting outside there. And they were telling me that it's not easy to get a job here with a college or university degree. How did you get yours?
What a lot of people also don't understand in this country is like connection is very important and your network plays a very major role. So through my network, that's how I ended up getting these positions.
What are some of the challenges that you went through as somebody who did not grow up here, who did not, you know, go through the system here? You just came here at the university and started working. What are some of these challenges that you went through?
My biggest challenge, like when I came, first of all, because I don't have any family, I came by myself at the age of 24 years old. So loneliness is a major problem that I had.
But there are people along the streets here. I mean, how do you get lonely in a country where there are people?
I know there are people here, but basically, like, for example, when I went to university back home, I knew a lot of people who are ahead of me, either from, we were with them in the same school back home, but moving to a new country, actually don't know, it takes time, like, to build friendship, but the first week, the orientation week, everything was new, you don't have any, like, people at the university to help you, right? To even like the environment is a little bit different. Like it was a huge campus, and you just landed. The food is different. You don't know the grocery stores here. So like literally, people have to give you an orientation or held your hand during the first few months.
So with this, your profession now, you're helping people to get settled in Canada, to find their jobs. And if you were given an opportunity to speak to people who would like to come to Canada to resettle here, what would you tell them?
I will tell them, first of all, like, if you're coming to Canada, especially if you're coming through the skills program, it's very important to do a research about the profession. Like, for example, if you're an engineer from back home, you're going to come to Canada. You have to know that when you come to Canada, actually, they don't recognize you here as an engineer. Right, you have to go through a long and tedious process in order for you to get your paperwork.
That's Stella Minga, a South Sudanese Canadian who helps immigrants with job placements in Kitchener-Waterloo. She was speaking to my colleague John Tanza tomorrow. Minga talks about how she balances her time between work and family. In Cameroon, citizens are outraged after a separatist fighter who chased several traditional rulers from the English-speaking Libelem district has enthroned himself as king. Raids by the military to capture him and ensuing battles led to the deaths of 11 suspected fighters and the beheading of a police officer. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé, where traditional rulers who escaped met over the weekend.
This is the voice of Lekialka Oliver, a separatist fighter who proclaimed himself the ultimate ruler of the Libelem district in the English-speaking southwest region. Heavily guarded by his fighters and accompanied by several women he says are his wives, Oliver, dressed in local traditional regalia, announces that he is the only king of Libelem. Recently, Oliver's fighters attacked and chased away many local traditional rulers and notables. He said they supported the central government in the war to make the north and southwest regions independent from the rest of Cameroon and its French-speaking majority. At least two of the traditional rulers were killed. Andreas Lekunze Nembo, traditional ruler of Babumbu village and president of the Libelem Chiefs Conference, says the escaped chiefs are outraged by the desecration of their palaces.
There's fire in the house. Fire because our customs, tradition, and cultural heritage continue to be abused. The desecration of a palace by separatists. Secondly, general insecurity, intimidation, and these barbaric actions to our greatest surprise.
In an attempt to capture Oliver, the military says it mounted raids on separatist camps in Libelem, killing at least six fighters within the past 3 days. Other battles were reported in the northwestern towns of Bamenda and Dop, killing another five separatist fighters. The fighters also beheaded a policeman. Colonel Sonny Joseph Ajang, Director of Administrative and Regulatory Affairs in Cameroon's Ministry of Defense, says the separatists have beheaded seven people over the past month.
We ask ourselves, why do you chop off the head of someone you have already killed? This is to send some warning waves to the minds of soldiers that we stay resolute as far as our duties are concerned, irrespective of all the atrocities we have.
Deben Chofo, governor of the English-speaking Northwest region, says security services are attempting to stop the barbarism.
This is unbearable. And on behalf of the government of the Republic, we condemn it strongly. And the investigation are ongoing to uncover those that have done that devilish act.
Early this month, Cameroon's President Paul Biya organized what he called a national dialogue to solve the separatist crisis that has killed close to 3,000 people since 2016. Separatist groups on social media called the dialogue a non-event and refused to participate. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Makafa by Abdelrahman Abdellah. That's a taste of Abdelrahman Abdellah with the song Makafa. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.